The student becomes the teacher.
It's Lecture Me, brought to you by Blue Hills Secondhand Books in Parnell.
It is, and a university student is going to talk us through their last lecture, and in the studio with me is Nick Lindstrom. You're a Nicholas, or are you a Nick?
Honestly, I've been fighting that battle my whole life. I still don't know. I'm finding out for myself.
What would you like me to call you?
Nick is fine for this morning. Nick is great, yeah.
Great.
Hey, short, sharp, to the point.
I'm glad you like those tracks we've been playing.
They were so good. I love Prince and Sanguine too. That was crazy. That was so good.
You're an 80s kid.
I'm getting better at it. I think I've slowly come around to the realization that the 80s is the best decade. So, yeah.
Wow, that's an unusual opinion.
Yeah, well, I just think about all the music that was produced during that decade, and it just seems like, I don't know, every time I listen to 80s music, my brain turns from disliking it to being like, actually, you know what? This is the best thing I've ever heard. So
yeah, but having said that, that Prince track, that Soft and Wet track, was released on his birthday, 1978, which is
true.
Which is, you know, the time that the era that was, because it was the punk era, and so he was, you know, in some ways, I mean, musically he was in his own genre, but he was going against the grain.
100. It's so interesting to think back. I guess being in the time and being like, this kid Prince is out, and now, you know, we say Prince and everyone knows exactly who you're talking about, you know. So it would have been cool to be able to exist in that time period and really liked Prince when no one else did.
True. Hey, so you're going to talk us through a lecture, Media 202, Hollywood and Its Others.
Yes.
Nick's studying a BA, double majoring in English and Media Studies. This is a really interesting topic, and Nick's just shown me this picture. So let everyone know what you just showed me in regard to the original King Kong movies.
Yeah, 100%. So the picture that I just pulled up is a photo shoot. I think Anne Leibovitz did the photo shoot. It's a cover for Vogue. And it's a photo of LeBron James, and he's wearing a black singlet, bouncing a basketball, while holding Gisele Bündchen, is that how you say her last name? She's wearing the kind of Turkish dress, and side by side with a painting that was done in, I think it was the early 1900s, depicting like an ape on a building, King Kong-esque, holding a woman like that. And side by side, you look at the photos, you can see that it drew inspiration from that, but it's that positioning of a black man in that kind of brutish role that ties in with today's kind of, you know, Lecture Me topic, which is King Kong.
And when you showed it to me, I looked at it and I thought, oh, great photo, because I like Annie Leibovitz. And then I looked at it and again, I thought, no, it's not.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. You do a double take, and I think people only caught it on the back end and were like, oh, this was the inspiration for this? That's crazy. But yeah, it's all about, I guess, there's this history of demonizing black male sexuality, and that just kind of is the next iteration of that.
And where he's depicted as an ape, basically.
Yeah, 100%. He's put in that role, yeah.
So the lecture topic is symbolism in the original King Kong, focuses on representation of black male sexuality in King Kong.
Yeah.
The lecture was given by Dr. Emily Holland, and when Nick came in, we were both of us useless at maths, trying to work out.
Arts major, yeah.
Makes my brain melt down. Tried to work out how long King Kong's been around, the movie sort of franchise. 1933, we finally worked it out.
1933, yeah. 91 years.
Good
man. 91 years. How good.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, and the original came out in 1933. It was directed by Marion C. Cooper and Ernest O'Brien. And, yeah, starring Anne Darrow. Oh, sorry. Anne Darrow was the character, but it was Faye Ray who was starring in it. It's been lovely to go back down these, like, old Hollywood movies and especially the star system, and learn about all these old stars that were big for, like, my grandmother. You know, like, I'm like, oh, Nana, I heard about this person. She's like, oh, she was amazing in my day. but yeah, at the time, it was one of those films that was a bit of a technical feat, because it used stop motion before stop motion was popular, and it used painted sets on glass panes. They'd paint the sets on glass panes and lay them over each other. Yeah, it was really a feat of, I guess, technical skill in filmmaking. Yeah, and it's become an icon in pop culture, which is awesome. Yeah, but for this lecture, we had obviously a reading to focus on, and the reading was from Thomas E. Wartenberger, and it was Humanizing the Beast, King Kong, and the Representation of Black Male Sexuality, which is an element I never thought about watching King Kong.
Not until you showed me that picture.
Yeah, which is insane, right? Yeah. But basically, Thomas E. Wartenberger goes on and talks about how King Kong is a symbolic representation of how American society treats black male sexuality is, you know, this they dehumanize the black male, basically. And there's a whole history of it, really. D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, which is possibly the most racist film ever made, which came out in 1925, I believe, centers around, you know, like that idea of a black man who has desires for a white woman and will come and kidnap her and take her. And it's basically a KKK film. But that idea, the archetype that was born out of that was the archetype of a black buck. Have you heard of that?
No.
So it's basically, yeah, terrible. The stereotype or this archetype of this inhuman, beast-like black male who has these sexually overt desires for the white woman and can't control his desires, so has to be broken. Yeah, kind of thing. And it stems all the way from slavery. But the thing about King Kong is there's different readings of this film, with some people saying that it was kind of revolutionary and progressive, and so the fact that it was reflexive of the film industry at the time, and, you know, the black people not being able to be cast, because at the end of the film, you begin to empathize with King Kong, right? People are like, you know, there's that famous, infamous scene where he's on the tower. And
yeah,
he's
the
holding
Beauty
her.
And the yeah. Beast type thing.
Yeah, and you realize, right. You know, he puts her in the window and he wants to protect her and love her, so we empathize with her. But at the same time, it's still comparing a black man to a beast.
Yeah, well, I actually, watching that movie, I mean, I'm not a huge King Kong fan, but it didn't occur to me that that was actually the representation.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Personally, but obviously given the times that it was, you know, when it was written and filmed, it was. So has that continued throughout the decades? I mean, was that actually ever brought to the fore and discussed in the ensuing years, and filmmakers then have changed tack in that particular King Kong?
I think in terms of King Kong, it's so ingrained in the character that I don't think that's changed in terms of interpretations of King Kong, but in terms of the film industry in general, I think attitudes have gotten a lot better. But also, I think, of course, right? Yeah, I think it's also, you know, having black filmmakers now who are able to see a project and see it from a black perspective, a black worldview, and be like, that's wrong, you shouldn't put that in there, has been such a help.
How can you change that with that particular movie franchise? You can't really, can you? That's, you know, there's no way of doing it.
No, you can't. It runs deep. And obviously this is one reading of it. Some people would be like, it's just a film about a giant ape. And like, yeah, it is. But if you put it in the context of the time it was created,
right.
There's other problems with the film too, like the representation of, you know, indigenous people. Oh, women and indigenous people.
Right.
Yeah. It goes deep.
That's right. Indigenous people, exactly. There's all these, you know, everybody's going crazy on the island.
Everyone's going crazy on the island. It's insane. But yeah, that's what we were diving into there. And it's kind of nice because we're seeing films and representations of black male sexuality that are more nuanced and in depth. Like, you know, Moonlight was a film that I always harken back to as a beautiful film that allows for nuance and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And also in your course that you're doing, your Bachelor of Arts, you've done another lecture from the same course that covered that Disney film Lilo and is it Lilo?
Lilo and Stitch. It was. This is a one of my favorite lectures. I actually was at my house the other day, my flat, and I was putting on a movie, and I was like, sorry, I just have to watch a movie for class. And I'm in the lounge, and someone's writing there. They're like, oh, good, go ahead. And Lilo and Stitch starts playing and they look at me and they're like, you're joking. I know you're not watching Lilo and Stitch for class, but we were. Lilo and Stitch, which was directed by Chris Sanders and Dean DeBlas, is an animated film. Mm. Came out in 2002, a year after I was born. And it's basically about, you know, Stitch is an alien and he's this monster, this beast, and he escapes to Earth and this little girl called Lilo. And it's their friendship. And, you know, she's going through a hard time. She has no friends. And Stitch becomes her friend. It's a really beautiful film. But at the heart of it is kind of this idea of assimilation into American society, which is running underneath. It's always funny talking about this kind of stuff out loud because I hear myself and I go, wow, we're such art majors. Like, who watches Lilo and Stitch and goes, it's about assimilation? But it really is in terms of everything. You know, there's a scene that's particularly poignant in which the childcare caseworker tells Nani, who's Lilo's older sister, you know, when I get back here, this dog, talking about Stitch, better be a model citizen. Yeah, so, you know, Lilo goes about trying to make Stitch a model citizen. She's got a spray bottle. And then she shows him Elvis. She goes, this is the model citizen that you should be like. She plays him Elvis.
I obviously haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's great. You should actually, it's amazing.
I will now. I'll stop calling it Lilo.
It's pretty OG. But, yeah, and he ends up dancing like Elvis. But it's that whole scene is about assimilation and trying to change Stitch and bring him into American society. And I think Elvis is that icon that...
Yeah.
Is, you know, such a good figure to choose for that because he's the poster boy for Americana and, you know, the strong American ideals and values.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some people would say. Yeah, and also it being set, the film set in Hawaii, which adds another layer because, you know, it's the indigenous people who had to be assimilated or by force into American society. So there's themes of assimilation running throughout it. Which is really interesting.
Hey, so Nick, is this what year are you in your course?
I'm in my second year.
Second year, yeah, okay. Yeah. So three year
degrees. Yeah, I've got one 3 year. Yeah, I've got one more year left, and then who knows what's going to happen?
Oh, who knows?
Yeah,
What do you want to do?
Oh, I'm really tossing it up at the moment. To be honest, I want a holiday, but I'm not too sure. I think the option's always open. I think about teaching all the time. It's always on the brain.
Like a university lecturer or a high school?
Just high school. I think teachers are the best thing this world has to offer. They're amazing. Oh. I've had such great teachers. I think I should give back.
God, I love the way you're thinking. Fantastic. Not many people would come to that so early on, you know?
Yeah. It's real interesting talking to my friends because they're always like, it's the second or third option. And I'm like... It should be the first.
It should be the first, yeah. Right. Hey, we were talking about King Kong, and there's so many songs when you were coming in. I was thinking, okay, I looked up some tracks that, you know, had the name King Kong or about King Kong. There's so many of them.
So many tracks. He's an icon. He's a real icon.
He's an icon, yeah. So I can play an old one from the Kinks, the mono mix of King Kong, or maybe Voom. They've got a track called King Kong. Should we go for the local boys? Yeah.
Why not?
Okay, but hey, nice to talk to you, Nick.
Nice to talk to you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.